Welcome to Zichru Daf Simanim. I'm Rabbi Avraham Goldar, and today we're Zichru Shabbos, Daf Kuf Yud Aleph. So the 3 points we're going to focus on. Number one, the Mishnah states that one who has tooth pain may not sip vinegar through them, because one may not heal oneself on Shabbos, but he may dip food into vinegar in his usual manner, even though he may become cured as a result. Rav Acha bar Papa asks a contradiction, that the Mishnah implies that vinegar is good for the teeth, whereas the Pasuk states, Kachomitz Lishinayim Ka'ashnu Einayim. Like vinegar is to the teeth, and like smoke is to the eyes. This implies that vinegar is not good for the teeth. So the Gemara gives two answers. Either the Pasuk is referring to the juice of unripe grapes, which is unhealthy, whereas the Mishnah is referring to vinegar. Or both the Pasuk and the Mishnah are referring to vinegar, and the Mishnah is referring to where there is a wound, and the Pasuk is referring to where there is no wound. Point number two, the Mishnah states that one feeling pain in his loins may smear them with oil, because people often do so even for not for healing purposes. However, one may not use rose oil. Princes, though, may smear with rose oil, since they use it even during the week. Rabbi Shimon argues it and says, Kol Yisrael b'nei malachim hem, all Yisrael are princes, meaning that it is mutter for anyone to smear with rose oil. So Rashi explains that according to the Tanna Kamma, rose oil is too expensive for most people to be used merely for anointing. Therefore, when they do use it, it's clear that they're doing so for the purpose of healing. Rabbi Shimon, however, permits its use because halacha does not distinguish between people based on economic status, permitting something to some and forbidding it to others. And point number three, the first Mishnah of the 15th Perek states that the knots, which one is liable for tying on Shabbos, are the camel driver's knot, the kesher gemaling, and the sailor's knot, kesher sapanim. The Gemara clarifies that these are permanent knots. Ramir disagrees and said that one is not liable for any knot that one can untie with one hand. Rav Achadvoy, the brother of Mar Acha, asks what Ramir holds in terms of a bow which is tightly made. Is Ramir's reason to allow a knot which one can untie with one hand only require that one can untie the knot with one hand, in which case one is permitted to tie a tightly made bow? Or is this reason because a knot that can be untied with one hand is clearly not tight, but one would be chai for tying a bow tightly? The Gemara leaves it as a teku. So once again, the 3 points are: number one, the Mishnah states that one who has tooth pain may not sip vinegar through them, because one may not heal himself on Shabbos, but he may dip food into vinegar in his usual manner, even though he may become cured as a result. Rav Acha bar Papa asks a contradiction, that the Mishnah implies that vinegar is good for the teeth, whereas the Pasuk states, Kachomitz Lishinayim Ka'ashnu Einayim. Like vinegar is to the teeth, and like smoke is to the eyes. This implies that vinegar is not good for the teeth. So the Gemara gives two answers. Either the Pasuk is referring to the juice of unripe grapes, which is unhealthy, whereas the Mishnah is referring to vinegar, or both the Pasuk and the Mishnah are referring to vinegar, and the Mishnah is referring to where there is a wound, and the Pasuk is referring to where there is no wound. Point number two, the Mishnah states that one feeling pain in his loins may smear them with oil, because people often do so, even not for healing purposes. However, one may not use rose oil. Princes, though, may smear with rose oil, since they use it even during the week. Rav Shimon argues and says, Kol Yisrael b'nei malachim hem, all Yisrael are princes, meaning that it is mutter for anyone to smear with rose oil. Rashi explains that according to the Tanna Kamma, rose oil is too expensive for most people to be used merely for anointing. Therefore, when they do use it, it's clear that they're doing so for the purpose of healing. Rabbi Shimon, however, permits its use because halacha does not distinguish between people based on economic status, permitting something to some and forbidding it to others. And point number three, the first Mishnah of the 15th Perek states that knots which one is liable for tying on Shabbos are the camel's driver knot, the kesher hagemalin, and the sailor's knot, kesher sapanim. The Gemara clarifies that these are permanent knots. Rabbi Meir disagrees and says that one is not liable for any knot that one can untie with one hand. So Rav Achadvoy, the brother of Mar Acha, asks what Rav Meir holds in terms of a bow which is tightly made. Is Rav Meir's reason to allow a knot which one can untie with one hand only required that one can untie the knot with one hand, in which case one is permitted to tie a tightly made bow? Or is his reason because a knot that can be untied with one hand is clearly not tight, but one would be chai for tying a bow tightly? The Gemara leaves it as a teku. All right, so now we go to our Simcha Kuf Yud Aleph, and a lot of people suggested a karate master going Kia. It's a good one. We had IKEA, the store of furniture. We had Yisrael Osberg from Ramat Beit Shemesh suggesting the hapless husband trying to put together the IKEA furniture, which I totally relate to. We had the kiosk at the airport. Uri Berger suggested a tikiya on Rosh Hashanah. We had coyote. But the most popular one was probably a kayak, which we're going to go with a kayak, a kayaker, for our Simavir Kuf Yud Aleph. So thank you, everybody, for sending your suggestions. And kayaker is going to be our simon for Kuf Yud Aleph. So here goes. The kayaker with tooth pain who got distracted sipping vinegar and smearing rose oil on his loins accidentally went over Niagara Falls and was pulled out of the river by a rope tied in a tightly tied bow. Once again, in slow motion. The kayaker, that must mean we're on Daf Kuf Yud Aleph. The kayaker with tooth pain got distracted sipping vinegar, which reminds us, the Mishnah says that one who has tooth pain may not sip vinegar through them because one may not heal himself on Shabbos, but he may dip food into vinegar in his usual manner, even though he may become cured as a result. Rav Acha bar Papa asks a contradiction that the Mishnah implies that vinegar is good for the teeth, whereas the Pasuk states, k'chometz l'shinayim k'ashen l'einayim, like vinegar is to the teeth and like smoke is to the eyes. This implies that vinegar is not good for the teeth. The Gemara gives two answers. Either the Pasuk is referring to juice of unripe grapes, which is unhealthy, whereas the Mishnah is referring to vinegar, or both the Pasuk and the Mishnah are referring to vinegar, and the Mishnah is referring to where there is a wound, and the Pasuk is referring to where there is no wound. So the kayaker with tooth pain got distracted sipping vinegar and smearing rose oil on his loins, which reminds us, the Mishnah states that one feeling pain in his loins may smear it with oil, because people often do so, even not for healing purposes. However, one may not use rose oil. Princes, though, may smear with rose oil since they use it during the week. Rabbi Shimon argues that Kol Yisrael b'nei malachim hem, all Yisrael are princes, meaning that it's mutter for anyone to smear rose oil. Rashi explains, according to the Tanakhama, rose oil is too expensive for most people to be used merely for anointing. Therefore, when they do use it, it's clear they're doing it for the purpose of healing. Rabbi Shimon, however, permits its use because halacha does not distinguish between people based on economic status, permitting something to some and forbidding to others. So the kayaker with tooth pain got distracted, sipping vinegar and smearing rose oil on his loins, accidentally went over Niagara Falls, and was pulled out of the river by a rope tied in a tightly tied bow. Which reminds us, the first mission of the 15th parak states that the knots which one is liable for tying on Shabbos are the camel driver's knot, the kesher gemalin, and the sailor's knot, a kesher sapanim. The Gemara clarifies that these are permanent knots. Rav Meir disagrees and says that one is not liable for any knot that one can untie with one hand. Rav Achadvoy, the brother of Rav Acha, asks what Rabbi Meir holds in terms of a bow which is tightly made. Is Rabbi Meir's reason to allow a knot which one can untie with one hand only require that one can untie the knot with one hand, in which case one is permitted to tie a tightly made bow, or is his reason because a knot that can be untied with one hand is clearly just not tight, but one can be chayav for tying a bow tightly? The Gemara leaves it as a teiku. So once again, the kayaker with tooth pain who got distracted sipping vinegar and smearing rose oil on his loins accidentally went over Niagara Falls and was pulled out of the river by a rope tied in a tightly tied bow. All right, now it's time for a four blah bat chazara. Daf Kuf Zayin. So the symbol Kuf Zayin is couscous. So here goes. The person eating couscous, that must mean run Daf Kuf Zayin. The person eating couscous who was overjoyed when he found out he was completely exempt from lancing his boil, which reminds us, Shmuel said, Kupaturi de Shabbos patra wa aser, Labar Mahani Tlas, any place where the halacha states pater, it means that one is not liable midaraisa, however, it is still forbidden midarabbanan, except for the following three cases where the word pater means pater even midarabbanan. If one person sat in a doorway and blocked it completely, trapping an animal, and then a second person came and sat down beside him, even though the first person got up and went away and the doorway is now being blocked by the second person, the first person is liable and the second person is completely pater. The second case is Hamapis Morsim B'Shabbos. If one punctures a boil to remove the pus, he is putter. Rashi explains that he's not liable to the races since nothing has been rectified, and no Drabbanan was enacted in this case either because the person is in pain. And the third case is one who traps a snake on Shabbos so that it will not bite him is putter. Tosfos on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph explains that the case where the snake bite is not life-threatening. If it was, then it would be permitted to kill it on a Deraisa level. So the person eating couscous, who was overjoyed when he found out he was completely exempt from lancing his boil, lost his appetite when a bruised sheretz got trapped in his bowl. Which reminds us, the opening mission of the 14th parak states that one who traps or bruises one of the eight shratzim that are mentioned in the Torah is chayev. One is not chayev for bruising all other shkatzim or ramasim, all other vermin and crawling things, since they do not have hides, as Rashi explains. But one is chayev for trapping them. This is provided he needs them for some positive reason, like an ingredient for medicine. Rashi explains that the reason one is chayav for trapping these eight shratzim is that they are typically hunted. He provides two possible reasons why bruising them is forbidden. Bruising is either a tolda of shechita, since one is taking the life from that part of the animal, or it's the malach of tzovei of dying, since the animal's skin is discolored by the bruise. So the person eating couscous who was overjoyed when he found out he was completely exempt from lancing his boil lost his appetite when a bruised sheretz got trapped in his bowl and killed a louse. Which reminds us, Rav Yossi explained the machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and the Rabbanan whether one is chayav for killing a louse on Shabbos is based on their understanding of the rams whose hides were used for the construction of the Mishkan. Rabbi Eliezer learns that just as killing the rams involved the taking of a life, so too the prohibition applies to anything whose killing involves the taking of a life, which would include a louse. the Rabbanan hold that just as rams reproduce, so too the prohibition applies to anything that reproduces. Therefore, one is not liable for killing lice since they do not reproduce. Rashi on Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph says that they grow spontaneously from a person's skin. And the Aruch HaShulchan explains that they do reproduce, but since their eggs are too small to be seen by the naked eye, they are regarded as halachically non-existent. Daf Kuf Ches. So the symbol for Kuf Ches is a pickpocket. So here goes. The pickpocket, that must mean we're on Daf Kuf Ches. The pickpocket stole the chicken skin from the Tefillinmacher's jacket, which reminds us, Ravuna said that one may write tefillin on the hide of a kosher bird. Rav Yosef asks, what's the novelty of this ruling? It can't be to teach you that birds have a hide, as we already know that based on a Mishnah earlier that teaches that one who bruises beasts and birds is chayiv. So Abai said to Rav Yosef, Rav Huna is teaching a great deal, for we would have thought the hide of a kosher bird is not valid for tefillin, since a bird's hide is full of holes. And Rashi explains that the hide is holes, since it's perforated by its feathers. Abai explains that the holes are not problematic, because as they say in Eretz Yisrael, a hole which ink passes over and doesn't sink into is not considered a hole to render the parchment unfit to be used for tefillin. So the pickpocket stole the chicken skin from the Tefillinmacher's jacket while he was distracted at the Sudas Bris, which reminds us, when Rav arrived in Bavel, Shmuel told Karna to test Rav. Karna asked Rav three questions, the third one being, where is it derived that Bris meal is performed on that place, referring to the male member? Rav responded that it's learned from the Gezer Shav from the Parsha of Oral, where it states, or less so, it's blockage. Just as Oral refers to something that produces fruit, so too Bris Mila, which is the word Oral so, refers to something that produces fruit. The Gemara notes that there is an identical Malchokas among the time Reb Oshia brings this Gezer Shava, whereas Rabbi Nassan states the Gezer Shava is not necessary. According to Rabbi Nassan, the proof comes from the Pasuk, Va'arl Zachar Asher Yimolas Barasar so, a blocked male, the flesh of his blockage, is not circumcised. This teaches that circumcision is performed on the place of the body where the difference between the male gender and the female gender are recognizable. So the pickpocket stole the chicken skin from the Tefillinmacher's jacket while he was distracted at the Sudas Bris, dipping his bread in salt water. Which reminds us, the next mission of the Perek deals with the Rabbanan making salt water on Shabbos. The Tanakhama says that one may not prepare brine, heal me, but one may prepare salt water for dipping bread or adding to cooked food, meaning one may make a small amount. So Rabbi Yossi challenges the Tanakhama, since brine should have the same halacha regardless of the quantity. He therefore states that making salt water is permissible if one adds oil to the water or to the salt before he mixes the water and salt together. And Rashi explains that mixing the oil in first weakens the mixture of salt and water, even though it also weakens the mixture if it's poured in afterwards. Doing so is forbidden, because putting the salt and water in first resembles the malacha of ma'abed, of tanning. Daf Kuvtes. So the symbol for Kuvtes is Hatsala, like with a medical kit, so here goes. When Hatsala, that means we're on Daf Kuvtes with our medical kit. So when Hatzal got a call from someone who didn't wash their hands three times in the morning, which reminds us, a brice at the bottom of Kuvches on the base listed parts of the body, such as the eyes, nose, and ears, that should not be touched in the morning before washing one's hands, because a spirit called Bas Melech rests on the hands and causes harm. In a brice on this stuff, Rabbi Nassan said, Bas Horn Hizo, Makpedes Ad Shiyuchas Yadav Gimel Pamim. This spirit is a free agent and insists on remaining until one washes his hands three times. Rabbeinu Hananel explains that it commands respect among the other ruchos, the other spirits, like a free man among people. So when Hatzal got a call from someone who didn't wash their hands three times in the morning, and subsequently had a donkey step on top of their foot, the team took out some vinegar from their kit, which reminds us, the Gemara brings a teaching from Mar Ukva, who said that one who injured his hand or foot should not hesitate to reduce his swan with wine on Shabbos, because wine is not an effective treatment. The Gemara then relates that Rav Hillel told Rav Ashi that he learned in the Academy of Kahana that it is forbidden to use vinegar because it is an effective treatment. Subsequently, Ravina once visited Rav Ashi in his home and saw that a donkey had stepped on Rav Ashi's foot and that Rav Ashi was using vinegar to reduce its swelling. When Rav Ashi asked Rav Ashi if he doesn't agree with Rav Hillel that using vinegar is prohibited, Rav Ashi responded that gav hayad v'gav haregel sha'ani, a wound on the back of the hand or on top of the foot is different, meaning it's more dangerous and can be life-threatening. And Rashi explains, therefore, one can be Makal Shabbos in this case. So when Hatzal got a call from someone who didn't wash their hands three times in the morning and subsequently had a donkey step on their foot, the team took out some vinegar from their kit and told them to bathe in the Yom HaGadol. Which reminds us, the Gemara brings conflicting brises, with one stating that it's permitted to bathe in the Yom HaGadol on Shabbos for therapeutic reasons, and the other stating that it's forbidden to do so. After two possible resolutions are rejected, the Gemara answers that the brise that permits bathing in the Yom HaGadol was referring to its fine waters, its good waters. Rashi explains that people would wash in those waters even during the week, not for therapeutic reasons. Therefore, it wouldn't be recognizable that one is doing so for a cure. The braisa that prohibits bathing in the Yamagata was referring to its foul parts, where it would be clear to others that one's intent is for healing purposes and not merely for bathing. Daf Kuf Yud. So the symbol Kuf Yud is a gold key ceremony. So here goes. When the mare got bitten by the snake at the gold key ceremony, that means Ron Daf Kuf Yud. When the mare got bitten by the snake at the gold key ceremony, everybody rushed around looking for a white donkey, which reminds the Gemara in Kuf Tes Amud Beis taught that one bitten by a snake should obtain an embryo of a white donkey, tear it open, and place it on the bite. This works provided that the donkey was not a trefa. On this daf, an incident is brought of a Jewish officer of the king that was bitten by a snake, and 13 white donkeys were brought to heal him, but they were all found to be trefos. There was a 14th donkey that they found, and while they're bringing it to him, it was eaten by a lion. Abai suggests that perhaps a snake of the rabbis bit him, for which there's no cure. As it says in the Pasuk, reports Gadar Yishkenu Nachash, and he who breaches the fence, the words of the sages, will be bitten by a snake, meaning that maybe he transgressed something that the sages said, and due to that he did not merit to find a cure. Abai was told that in fact this officer violated Rav Yitzchak Bar Bizna's decree, which forbade for 1 year after the death of Rav bringing myrtle branches and palm branches together with bells to weddings which bring joy to the chasen and kala. So when the mare got bitten by the snake at the gold key ceremony, everybody rushed around looking for a white donkey, and all they could find was a tired out snake in the sand, which reminds us the Gemara presents several solutions to situations when a man or woman is threatened by a snake. If one, for example, is being pursued by a snake, one should run in sand. And Rashi explains that snakes cannot move swiftly in sand, and therefore it will eventually turn back. So when the mare got bitten by the snake at the gold key ceremony, everybody rushed around looking for a white donkey, and all they could find was a tired out snake in the sand and a depressed rooster that no longer had a crest. Which reminds us that to bring numerous remedies for a zava, the Gemara lists several cures for one suffering from jaundice. It questions the validity of a certain elixir for jaundice since it will result in sterility, and the Torah explicitly forbids castration. The Gemara answers that the prohibition only applies when one intends to damage the reproductive organs directly. In drinking the elixir, the sterilization occurs indirectly. To support this assertion, the Gemara brings a teaching from Rabbi Yochanan that one who wants to castrate a rooster should remove its crest and it becomes castrated on its own accord. But the Gemara deflects this proof based on Rav Ashi, who taught that a rooster's pride is its crest. And Rashi explains that when the crest is removed, the rooster mourns its loss and refrains from copulation, but is actually not castrated. All right, now it's time to conclude our pop quiz of 10 questions plus 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. Number 1. Which daf do we discuss making salt water on Shabbos? That's on daf Kufches. Good. Number 2. Which daf do we have machlokes regarding who can use rose oil on Shabbos? That's on daf Kufyudolf. Great. Number 3. Which daf do we learn about the person who got a snake bite and wasn't able to be healed because he didn't listen to the rabbis? That's on daf Kufyud. Good. Number 4. Which daf do we learn about abbreviations in the Torah, such as the word Anochi in the Aseret Dibros? That was on daf Kufhe. Good. Number 5. Which daf do we learn the reasons why one cannot trap or bruise a sheretz? That's on daf Kufvav. Good. Number 6. Which daf do we learn that one cannot sip vinegar if they have tooth pain? That's on daf Kufyud off. Good. Number 7. Which daf do we discuss in washing the hands 3 times in the morning and the ruach ra that's there? That's on daf Kuftes. Good. Number 8. Which daf do we learn the meaning behind the various osios in the Aleph base? That's on daf Kufdalad. Good. Number 9. Which daf do we discuss an elixir for jaundice that causes sterility? That's on daf Kufyud. Good. And number 10. Which daf do we learn that one can be chayav for the malacha bona, even for a kol shehu? That's on daf Kufbeis. Good. And now the 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. Number 1. Which daf do we learn about the bracha on shlakos, on cooked vegetables? That's on daf Lamed Ches. Good. Number 2. Which daf do we have machlokes regarding when a meal is considered over the Gemara Suda? That's on daf Membeis. Good. And finally, question number 3. Which daf do we learn about waking up with a pusik in one's mouth is a nevuah katana? That's on daf Nunzayin. Excellent. Right. That concludes our pop quiz. 10 questions plus 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. This is Rabbi Avram Goldar from Zichru. Wishing you a great day and great learning.